This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune's with us once again to answer some of your parenting questions. Joanna, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Sean.
My 15-year-old daughter's father left to work in Australia when she was two and met someone else, ended the marriage, never really came back at all, not even for visits. My daughter has met him maybe five times in her life. She used to talk on calls with him, etc., growing up, very sparsely, but she still did, which was good. I always encouraged it. But in the last year, she won't take his calls anymore and tells me she doesn't want to talk to him as he left her. She never asks for him, never gets upset when I bring it up to her. She'll even joke to her friends about how they have dads and she doesn't. And they all laugh at, like it's she still has no feelings on this matter at all. I'm worried she will crash one day and collapse in heartbreak. Should I make her go to a counsellor to talk and bring it out of her, or leave it be until she's ready? I'm trying to protect her from burying things under the carpet. She's a very happy, normal girl, other than this.
I think she's still a happy, normal girl, you know, and look at, will she collapse in the future and need and deserve a space to think all of that out? Maybe. You know, maybe she will. But it sounds like as her mum, this mum has done a great job and has really met this kid's developmental needs. She's thriving. She's holistically well, as is described here. And I think it's interesting about the, you know, making jokes with the friends. And one of the things that happens in teenage years is they spend more time hanging around each other's houses, not the organized play dates of young childhood, but just hanging around. And they also spend more time giving out about their parents to each other, so talking about them, mentioning them much more than small kids do. And so she may need a bit of a buffer, a line to say, well, you know, I don't have a dad. Just as a way of, don't even ask me, just explaining it away. I'm also thinking, though, in adolescence, it is a time, developmentally speaking, of identity reformation. So they're really rediscovering, who am I? And part of knowing who you are is really thinking through, of whom am I? Whose am I? And I think that's really complicated in this situation where there is a dad, at least theoretically, but he hasn't performed the function of dad in her life.
Yeah.
That's, I don't say that with judgment, Sean. Like, that's just the way it is.
You know,
she's seen him five times in 13 years.
He's a stranger to her.
Exactly. And the phone calls for young children, you know, children on calls, you're just, okay, I'll talk to you. But what is that? So when I'm reading this, I'm like, in truth, right now, where she's at in her life, who is he to her? And it might be that it is more fitting and makes more sense to her right now to say, I don't have a dad. And as she grows up, she may well want to explore the layers and maybe there's another family or half siblings or whatever it is over there that she may want to go to. But right now, she's not showing you signs that she needs to do that. I wouldn't take her joking with the teen friends about it or making light of it as signs she needs therapy. And that's the other thing when a parent says, and I get this a lot because I work with this age group a lot, will I make them go to therapy? Don't make them go to therapy. Don't pay them to go to therapy. Don't incentivize it in that way. I'll always say to parents, it's your job to get them there once. It's my job to get them to come back. But I wouldn't want you making her go, but gently reflecting that it's an option. Like if you catch her making a joke about it or saying, I don't have a dad, later, when it's just the two of you, you might say, I heard what you said. And of course, we know you do have a dad, but he's not actively in your life in the way other dads might be. And I just wanted to check in with you on that. Is that something you'd ever like to have a think about or a talk about? And if I'm a bit close to it, you know, therapy is always an option. And if she's like, no way, no, just say that's fine. I just want you to know it's always an option and I will support you in going there if and when you want to. But I also think, you know, we always say this and it's worth restating here. What a child really needs in their life is one good, stable, available, consistent, yeah, reliable adult in their life. This girl has had that and very likely extended family around her. She's okay.
Yeah, it's. I know somebody who was a psychotherapist whose father left when he was a child and he, you know, encountered him years later or sought him out years later and was expecting to have some sort of an emotional response. But didn't. And said, this man was a stranger to me. Yeah. And then he left it thinking, why did I think I was going to have an emotional response? It's the idea of a father rather than the actuality.
And often it's the fantasy. But also the start of this letter, you know, really made me kind of have a, oh, wow moment. Like I'm thinking of the mum in this situation.
Oh, that was an awful scenario.
Your partner goes very far away for work. I mean, it's really like a very dramatic version of going to the shop and never coming home. Mm. And because that's what happened here. And you're left all of a sudden, your marriage is gone and you're the sole parent to this 2-year-old child. So I'm also thinking that when you're thinking of therapy, don't rule yourself out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that it might be something. And I often think, Sean, when it comes to therapy with children and young people, sometimes a really effective way to approach that is for the parent to come to therapy. One of the ways we can affect a lot of change in children and how they think and believe and behave is to work through their parent. So if your daughter is saying, absolutely not, that's not for me, you can say, well, you know what? I think I'll go. Mm. I think I'm going to do that for myself. And you normalize it by you doing it. But it is also something that I would think if you haven't, and maybe this parent is like, oh, I've been there, you know, yeah, I've done it. But if you haven't, I would say, why not? And you definitely deserve that.
Yeah. I'm not sure if this fully falls under the parenting remit, but I'd really appreciate your advice. I'm a mother of three girls aged 11, 9 and 7. I'm currently 33 weeks pregnant with our fourth child. After many years of discussion, my husband agreed to try again, largely because he hopes this baby will be a boy. While I genuinely don't mind what gender our baby is, my husband is very open about his preference, particularly because he's obsessed with hurling and seems eager to pass that on to his son. God love him. The issue is that he expresses this in front of our daughters. Recently, my eldest, who is extremely sporty and excels at camogie, made a comment that really worried me. She said, Dad doesn't really care because I'm a girl. I'm concerned that if we do have a boy, my husband may unintentionally alienate our daughters and make them feel less than. On the other hand, if we don't have a boy, I fear he won't be able to hide his disappointment. How do I address this with my husband in a constructive way? And how can I best support my girls if his behaviour continues or worsens?
I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you say my husband may unintentionally alienate our daughters, I'm like, is it unintentional?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that, actually. And I don't know that I'd minimize and dismiss that as unintentional. I do notice as well, this is pregnancy number, well, it's going to be baby number 4, all going well. I notice they haven't had a gender scan.
Yeah.
By 33 weeks. And given the gender of this baby is in like, such hot contention here. Mm. Why not? Why haven't you? Now, there's lots of reasons that people choose, you know, it's nice to keep it a surprise and whatever. But in this situation, there's quite high emotional stakes involved in the gender of this child. So something in this couple has said, we don't want to know. And I don't know, is that just kicking the can down the road? We don't want to deal with it. The flip side of that is giving yourself time to deal with it before the baby's there. You know, part of becoming the parents of a child, it doesn't matter if it's your first or your fourth child, is there is a fantasy baby in pregnancy. You know, you imagine that baby, you think of them and their life and what they'll do and who they'll look like. And you give them a name and you imbue them with all these thoughts and beliefs and desires before they even exist. And then the transition into parenthood of that child is that you let go of the fantasy baby when you have the real baby to love and get to know that baby. I do think there is a process of that here that's just not quite happening. Now, I think it would be really easy, Sean, for me to come down really hard on this, Dad. And believe me.
Well, I commend your restraint.
But believe me, it is tempting because I could. And I will on that just say our children are not vanity projects. Okay. Nor are they extensions of us. Our job as parents is to raise them into autonomous adulthood so that we basically keep them close so that they leave us to some extent. They become their own people, but they are not our projects. They're not little versions of us, but it's that notion, while I wanted to give out about that, that just caught me. And I'm thinking, well, what if there is something in him that he is trying to heal or work through in parenting a boy? Maybe there is. I'm being very generous here, but I do want to put it out in case the dad, this sort of, you know, does resonate with him. Sometimes when becoming a parent, we are the child of a parent before we're the parent of a child. So whatever your experience of being parented in childhood, you're carrying some of that forward one way or the other, good, bad, indifferent, and everything in between. I'm wondering, and it, without judgment, therapy could be a really good option for this dad. Now, I know he's not the one writing to us, Sean.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if it's only a problem if you see it as a problem. Okay.
Yeah.
But if this is something you could talk with each other about before this baby comes, either therapy or many therapists, you know, myself included, when you work with children and young people, you also work with parents. And sometimes you're doing what we'd call therapeutic parenting work. So it's really about an exploratory piece about what's happening for you as a parent, not about the child. That would also be an option for him. And it would be a safe place to exhale this struggle with being a girl dad in a non-judgmental space. He could say whatever it is that maybe he's not saying, but his body language is clearly communicating, because there's a little girl here who has said, "Dad doesn't really care because I'm a girl."
I mean, that's awful.
That's the gut punch of a statement. And I know mom heard it, but I'm wondering, does dad know that she said that?
Mm.
It reminds me, you know, we got a letter a couple of weeks ago and
Common with my daughter. Yeah.
You know that, me and my 15-year-old, 16-year-old were not connecting. Now is the time. Now is the time to build that connection and that relationship. Those girls need their dad.
Yeah.
They deserve to have their dad. And this is his family. There's three girls. But, you know, if he grew up in a very male household and he's now feeling isolated in a female dominated household, or maybe the opposite, and maybe he's always craved male companionship growing up, or maybe there's a little part of a unhealed little boy within himself that he thinks, if I was parenting a boy, I would do it differently and I'd have this great father-son relationship that maybe I didn't have myself. There's all of those maybes there. So I want to err on the side of this could be something that you could explore and heal and work through. And on the other hand, do not see your children as extensions of yourself or vanity projects. He could have this coveted son, and this son could be like, keep your hurl.
Yeah.
I'm really into ballet.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Then what? Is he the wrong son?
Yeah.
You know, so I think this is much more about what dad is seeking, not about the gender of the child. And that will only be worked through by dad going into the therapeutic space.
But that puts the responsibility to an extent, because he didn't write to us, on a 33-week pregnant woman to have to talk to
him. On child number four.
On child number four to have to tell this.
Yeah, and also sounding like she's doing the heavy lifting with the parenting, because there is this apparent alleged disinterest in the girls. So like it's not enough to say, well, I do my bit in functional parenting. Children don't just need functional parenting. That's the bare bones of you're fed, you're clothed, you've got, you know, somewhere safe to sleep and live. But they need that over and above, you know, that playfulness, that connection, that shared joy, those moments of meeting. They need all of that to grow and thrive.
Yeah.
And without that, basically what they're doing is creating a problem for down the road. We're just talking about a 15-year-old who doesn't want to know her dad.
Yeah. Are men still like that? Or, and speaking as a proud father of two daughters, says another text. So somebody says, my husband wanted to try again for a boy. I told him to try with someone else. I'm done. I couldn't imagine a boy in this house now. John says it's the GAA syndrome. We came back to Ireland 25 years ago. After a few weeks, I met the chair of the local club in a pub. First thing he said to me was, have you any sons?
Wow.
And another text says, there's nothing wrong with wanting a boy if you're a man. This guy doesn't need therapy. He just wants to pass on everything he's learned in life.
Ah, now.
Well, one thing he hasn't learned is that women are equal to men.
Absolutely.
Check out the 21st century. It's a whole new development. They have the vote now and everything.
Absolutely.
It's mad stuff.
He has children and he can pass on a whole legacy through those children. So I don't buy into that.
My daughter is 9 years old and there seems to be a lot more talk about puberty among her peers lately, both at school and socially. I'm feeling unsure about when and how to start these conversations with her. Part of me worries that she's still quite young, but another part of me is anxious that something might happen, like her first period or body changes, before we've talked properly and she won't be emotionally prepared or understand what's going on. What's really been playing on my mind is overhearing another mum recently telling her daughter, as they were walking to school, that it's rude to talk about periods. That really unsettled me. Surely framing it that only way increases feelings of embarrassment or shame around something that's completely natural. I want my daughter to feel informed, confident and able to ask questions without feeling awkward or embarrassed, but I don't want to overwhelm her either. Any advice?
I mean, my first piece of advice here is it's not unusual for a child to have a period by 9 years old, so she definitely needs to know about it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think in schools, I think it's around fourth class typically, though some schools will do it in third class, where especially if a child already has their period, where they'll talk about, we're going to put a basket of, you know, hygiene products in the bathroom so the girls need to know what they are and they're going to talk to them about it. I would absolutely be having that conversation, ideally before nine, to be honest with you. And we've talked about this before as well. I think the younger you start this conversation, it doesn't mean you take a deep breath and you exhale everything on them at 6 years old or 5 years old, but you're just normalizing and drip feeding that. So you're more growing the conversation up in line with them growing up than starting it. The first thing I think as a parent, especially if, you know, you don't want it to feel embarrassing, I think that's often code for, I don't want to be embarrassed while I'm having this conversation. Yeah. The library is an immense resource for this. They have all of the books, so you can sit there some morning or afternoon, read them all and find not that one, not that one, that one. Because I think books can support this conversation, but I don't want this to sound like I'm saying give the 9 year old a book and walk away, because I think the book is helpful as parents to help us knit a narrative and to get the language right of how am I going to say this and how do I approach this? And then you have it conversationally with your daughter. And you leave the door open for the questions and then you leave the book there to say, this is another way of reading about it, but I'm here for any of your questions. And then you proactively check in with her. Mm. Sometimes when you give them the information, they're like, yeah, fine, whatever, you know, and the questions come much later. But I also think you want to her to know that you're the person to bring the questions to and not the semi-informed, but openly speaking peers who think, well, I have a little bit of information, so I'm now the self-appointed authority in the classroom to answer everyone's questions. You do. And when this other mum has said, you know, it's rude to talk about periods, I mean, of course, we don't want that message out there. But we also want to be mindful that because you've had a conversation with your daughter does not mean everybody else's mum has had a conversation with them or parent has had a conversation with them. So it might be that if this comes up in school, it's not a secret thing, it's not shameful, but it is for parents to talk to their children about, so you don't get pulled into answering those questions.
Yeah. By the same token, you know, girls talk to each other quite a lot in my experience. And like in third class, fourth class, it kind of can turn into a, you know, little Mary's got her period or has pubic hair or needs to wear a training bra or that kind of stuff.
Or going to swimming pools as a class group, all of the changing bodies. That's why by nine, she absolutely needs to know. But not just periods, everything about puberty.
Yeah, absolutely. But it can turn into, you know, have you got yours yet? And then sometimes a little girl can feel like, where's mine coming? You know, which is not something you'd wish on anyone, really. But,
no,
you know,
they're so young. They really are so young, but it does happen. And, you know, there is a book, I have it myself at home, called The Girl Guide to Growing Up. It's by Anita Naik, I think. N-A-I-K. I'm going to go with that. N-A-I-K.
Yeah. Okay. but it's The Girl Guide to Growing Up.
There's a boy version as well. And it's actually a slim, quite colourful, cartoon-esque drawn, but very factual book. Read it yourself as a parent before you give it to your child, obviously, because there is more than just periods in it. But it's a very accessible book for, I'd say, 9 to 12-year-olds would happily pick it up and learn from it. But it should support the conversation. It shouldn't supplement it.
Yeah, indeed. Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Fortune, there you are. Moncrief
Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.